A new report shines the spotlight on Dr. Anthony Fauci. The White House's chief medical advisor is now accused of holding significant investments that were poured into Chinese companies. China's virus death toll may be over 300 times higher than official figures claim. That's according to a new machine learning program developed in the UK. Countries in the Indo-Pacific region are teaming up. The US and Japan agree to stockpile munitions, focusing on the area around Taiwan, while the Philippines buys new weapons from India to discourage would-be foreign intruders. Beijing has been eyeing a key port in the Indo-Pacific region, but what makes it different from the rest? We look at its strategic implications and how the regime has gained control. And China's real estate crisis still plaguing the country's economy. Now it's hit sales numbers for China's biggest home builder. Welcome to China in Focus. I'm Tiffany Meyer. Before we turn to today's daily news, we have a short announcement. As you may already know, YouTube has demonetized us for about a year. That means our ability to run ads or earn money on YouTube has been taken away. So if you like our coverage, you can donate to show your support. Here's how. In the description box down below is a link that will take you through the entire process. Thank you for your continued support, and we look forward to providing you with more insights into China in the year ahead. A newly released financial record is putting a U.S. health expert in the spotlight. The controversy revolves around Dr. Anthony Fauci. His recent financial disclosure shows the doctor has significant investments in Chinese companies. According to Fauci's 2020 financial statement, first released by U.S. Senator Roger Marshall on Friday, Fauci held approximately $10 million in investments, including in a particular fund named the Matthews Pacific Tiger Fund. According to the fund's fact sheet, nearly half of this money went into companies based in China and Hong Kong. Many of them are linked to Beijing and benefit from its policies. Included are tech company Tencent, online shopping giant Alibaba, Hong Kong Exchange and Clearing, and drug developer WuXi Biologics. Among them, Tencent has been known to comply with the Chinese regime's demands, like collecting users' personal data, monitoring online activity, and censorship. Those practices also extend outside China to U.S.-based and other international users of its messaging app WeChat. Besides Tencent, Chinese e-commerce giant Alibaba has been accused of cybersecurity risks and espionage by U.S. investigators. For Fauci, the disclosed financial information comes at a hectic time. That's amid dwindling public trust in his handling of the pandemic as chief medical advisor to Biden. Last week, the Senate summoned Fauci to a hearing over suggestions that he lied to Congress about his gain-of-function work. The controversy continued this week after Senator Roger Marshall accused Fauci of lying on another occasion, this time on his finances. In a statement, Marshall wrote, "Just like he has misled the American people about gain-of-function research, about masks, testing, and more, Dr. Fauci was completely dishonest about his financial disclosures being open to the public." Previously, Fauci claimed he had made his earnings public for nearly four decades. A new machine learning program calculates the total virus death toll in China. It estimates that CCP virus deaths are close to 2 million. This is a far cry from Beijing's official reported death toll of around 4,500.
The COVID death toll in China could be more than 300 times higher than Beijing's official reports. This is according to an investigation by UK-based newspaper The Economist. The figure would put the number of deaths in China at around 1.7 million rather than 4,600. To obtain this number, The Economist built a machine learning program. It calculates the number of excess deaths, or unnatural deaths, for every day since the pandemic began. The newspaper provides links for those interested in inspecting their model and methodology. In addition to The Economist's investigation, there are two other indications that China might be under-reporting virus deaths. This is what George Cahoon, the director of the Quantitative Finance Program at Stevens Institute of Technology, tells NTD's David Zhang. One is that China hasn't reported a single virus death for the past 2 years.
Since April 15, 2020, China has reported zero COVID deaths on the mainland. I think that's impossible. It's medically impossible. It's statistically impossible. And remember, in 2020, there was no vaccine. Mm-hmm. There was no treatment. So you had an unprotected population that has shown zero COVID deaths, even though they've had tens of thousands of cases.
The United Nations compiles data of year-over-year deaths, regardless of cause, of all the countries in the world. From 2019 to 2021, China had an unexpected and sharp increase in the number of deaths. Calhoun says this is another indication of possible underreporting of virus deaths.
The trend line is flat for China in terms of the increase in that number every year going back 10 years. And then it suddenly jumps by a factor of 4 in 2019, and it jumps again in 2020 and again in 2021. And you do the math on that, and there's about 1 million deaths in China in those 3 years that surpass the trend line that you would expect. So something happened that caused 1 million extra deaths in China in those 3 years.
Calhoun says authorities' reporting of zero virus deaths could be a result of Beijing's zero COVID mandate. That has also led authorities to impose strict and rigid lockdowns on populated cities. But the lockdown could be hurting China's economy.
One place that you can see the effect, I think, is in the stock market. Every developed stock market, financial market in the world is up significantly in the last year or two, except for China. I'm not trying to say that that's all because of the lockdown, but the lockdown is going to be one of the factors.
According to a survey from the University of Washington, China is the world's only country that has not provided complete data on unnatural deaths during the pandemic period.
China is urging people to wear masks and gloves when opening mail, especially from abroad. That's after authorities suggested the first case of the Omicron variant found in Beijing could have arrived via a package from Canada. Francis McGuire reports.
The state broadcaster CCTV said on Monday that citizens should minimize their buys of overseas goods or receiving mail from abroad. It said people should protect themselves during face-to-face handovers and wear masks and gloves and even try to open the package outdoors. Health officials said the person found infected with Omicron opened a package from Canada and transmission through the parcel could not be ruled out. China has been largely alone in its view that COVID-19 can spread through cold chain imports like frozen meat and fish, while the World Health Organization has played down that risk. China has vowed to step up disinfection of overseas mail and insists postal staff are fully vaccinated when they handle it. The country has fought to stop COVID spreading with the Beijing Winter Olympics less than 3 weeks away. Hong Kong went so far as to order the cull of 2,000 hamsters on Tuesday, echoing the mainland's zero-tolerance policy even as much of the world shifts to living with COVID. It also warned pet owners not to kiss animals after a cluster of infections was traced to a pet shop there. The outbreak of Delta variant cases led to tests on hundreds of animals in the Chinese-ruled territory. 11 hamsters showed up positive. Health Secretary Sophia Chan told a news conference authorities were acting out of caution, even though there was no evidence domestic animals can infect humans. Hong Kong would not be the first place to cull animals infected with the virus. Last September, 3 pet cats were put down in the Chinese city of Harbin. In Europe, Denmark introduced a plan to cull all 17 million mink after a mutation of the virus spread to humans from one of the animals.
Human rights abuses in China have been in the international spotlight with the upcoming Beijing Winter Olympics. Now, an NBA team co-owner is sparking outrage. He said that nobody cares about the Chinese regime's persecution of the Uyghurs. NTD's Colin Fredrickson has the details.
Billionaire investor Chamath Palihapitiya is a co-owner of the Golden State Warriors basketball team. He tweeted on Monday night, "In re-listening to this week's podcast, I recognize that I come across as lacking empathy. I acknowledge that entirely." Palihapitiya was walking back comments he made in an earlier podcast in which he said nobody cares about what's happening to the Uyghurs.
And I think
that's
nice that
you
care. The rest of us don't care. I'm just well, telling you a very
care?
Hard.
Wait, wait,
I'm
you're
telling
you a very, personally don't care.
I'm telling you a very hard, ugly truth. Okay, of all the things that I care about, yes, it is below my line.
Rights experts, eyewitnesses, and the U.S. government say that more than 1 million Uyghurs and other Muslims are imprisoned in labor camps in China's Xinjiang region. The State Department declared Beijing's repressive policy in Xinjiang to be genocide. The abuses, including slave labor, forced sterilization, mass detention, and surveillance, have driven the U.S. and other nations to stage a diplomatic boycott against the upcoming Beijing Winter Olympics. Pali Hapatia said that the Xinjiang issue was, in his words, not top of mind for many people.
You know, I care about a bunch of, I care about America's crippling and, you know, decrepit healthcare infrastructure. But if you're asking me, do I care about a segment of a class of people in another country? Not until we can take care of ourselves will I prioritize that for us.
His remarks quickly garnered widespread attention and criticism on social media. The Golden State Warriors distanced themselves from the internet storm. The team said on Twitter, "Mr. Pali Hapatia does not speak on behalf of our franchise, and his views certainly don't reflect those of our organization." Colin Fredrickson, NTD News.
Cooperation is growing among China's neighbors. The Philippines has acquired a new anti-ship missile system purchased from India for nearly $400 million. The deal comes as India works to strengthen its defense ties with the U.S. and its allies. That's as Beijing's military continues to expand in the region, both on land and at sea. The supersonic cruise missiles are made under a joint India-Russia project. The Philippines plans to use them as deterrents, urging foreign ships not to intrude. That's as the country has repeatedly accused China of sending militia boats into its waters in recent years. Beijing has laid claim to nearly all of the South China Sea and expanded its military activities to support that claim, including constructing 7 heavily fortified artificial islands. That's despite international arbitration ruling in 2016 that Beijing's claims have no legal basis. Disputes over the South China Sea involve China and 6 other nations. Besides the Philippines, the debate also includes Vietnam, Indonesia, Malaysia, Brunei, and Taiwan. The U.S. and Japan are reportedly discussing stockpiling munitions in their defense facilities in Japan. According to Nikkei Asia on Sunday, the issue was discussed during a meeting of U.S. and Japanese foreign ministers and defense ministers. In a statement, both sides reportedly committed to increased shared use of U.S. and Japanese facilities, including efforts to strengthen Japan's self-defense forces posture in areas including its southwestern islands. Those islands cover an area that reaches just north of Taiwan, and the westernmost of these islands is about 60 miles east of Taiwan. The U.S.-Japan joint plan will enable quick deployment of weapons in the Taiwan Strait and its immediate vicinity. Since last year, the Chinese Communist regime has ramped up its presence in the area, sending more military aircraft into Taiwan's air defense identification zone and triggering concern over Taiwan's safety. The outlet says the U.S. and Japan will also share runways as part of this agreement. And they said the two countries would also research so-called directed energy weapons, such as laser weapons, seen as crucial in shooting down drones and missiles. The meeting is the first of its kind under Japan's new prime minister. Located at a crucial junction deep within the Indo-Pacific region, one nation seems to be looking for a financial shakeup. Sri Lanka is asking Beijing to restructure its debt. It owes China almost $4 billion. And the island nation is facing one of its worst economic crises yet. Sri Lanka has over $7 billion of foreign debt, but it only holds a little over $1.5 billion in foreign reserves. So when China's foreign minister visited Sri Lanka in early January, authorities said if China could restructure their country's loans, it would help relieve that strain.
But we were confident that with support from friend countries like China, we will be able to overcome these challenges soon.
Yet some argue that China is part of the reason Sri Lanka acquired the massive debt in the first place. China is one of Sri Lanka's biggest lenders. It's loaned Sri Lanka over $5 billion in the past decade. Media reports have used Sri Lanka as the poster child for Beijing's debt trap diplomacy. though China calls it by a different name, the Belt and Road Initiative. Under it, the regime offers billions of dollars in loans to developing countries, earmarked for building up their infrastructure. But when countries fail to pay back the money, the regime then takes control of their strategic assets, like ports that could prove useful for military purposes. In Sri Lanka's case, it was forced to hand over a port to China on a 99-year contract. The port, called the Hambantota, sits on a crucial location. It's less than 10 miles away from one of the world's busiest shipping routes. It's also several miles away from one of the world's busiest oil transport routes. The path links two of the world's most important oil transit choke points, the Strait of Hormuz and the Strait of Malacca. And countries like China, Japan, and South Korea depend on it for the bulk of their oil supplies. More than half of the world's oil is moved via fixed shipping routes like this one. And it's critical that these routes stay free and open, as the slightest disruption could drive up energy costs or delay oil supplies. For China, taking control of the Sri Lankan port also means it gains a foothold just a few hundred miles away from the shores of India, a major rival. What's more, the Hambantota port is a deep-water seaport, making it an ideal harbor for large warships. And Beijing likely knew the port's true value from the start. A former Sri Lankan official who was involved with the deal explains. He told the New York Times that Chinese officials had said they expected Sri Lanka to let them know who is coming and stopping here. Sri Lanka's lease with China doesn't permit military activities at the port. Though some argue under its mounting debt, the country could give in and agree to a renegotiation if Beijing presses for it. In 2014, Sri Lanka allowed a Chinese warship and a submarine to dock at one of its ports. But let's take a step back. First, how did China take control of the port? It started with Sri Lanka's former president, Mahinda Rajapaksa. In the early 2000s, Rajapaksa wanted to establish a large-scale seaport in the town of Hambantota. That's despite early studies showing a port there might not be profitable. Frequent lenders in the region, like India, didn't want to take the risk, but China said yes.
Sri Lanka will be well-positioned to play a strategic role in the One Belt, One Road initiative.
And as predicted, the port didn't generate enough profit to pay off its construction loans. To pay the bill, Sri Lanka was forced to hand over the control of the port to a Chinese state-owned company for 99 years. This chain of events isn't unique.
The same thing happened in the tiny East African country of Djibouti, which also had a concessionary port built by the People's Republic of China, strategically located right on the entry to the Red Sea, and where the United States has strong defense interests.
Djibouti is home to the largest U.S. military base in Africa, and the port is just a brief 20-minute drive away. In addition, it's next to a strait called Bab el-Mandeb. That route is an essential gateway to the Suez Canal, one of the world's most important shipping routes. Almost 10% of the world's oil supplies and 20% of all commercial goods move through the Suez Canal.
Djibouti defaulted on its loan, and China ultimately controls operations in the port in Djibouti.
Djibouti and Sri Lanka are only pieces of China's massive Belt and Road Initiative. On top of port deals, Beijing is also bankrolling other critical infrastructure projects across the world, like highways, power grids, and railroads. Critics say the program is part of how Beijing takes control of smaller countries' lifelines, using them to slowly build its own influence circle to counter the West. China's property crisis is showing no sign of letting up. The country's biggest home builder by sale saw its bonds drop to record lows. The property company Country Garden's bonds were the worst on record last week. And on Monday, it fell even lower. The company's shares also fell on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange. Though Country Garden isn't alone. Other property group shares, including Central China Real Estate, Yuzhou Group, KW Group, Jingrui, and Sunac, all fell sharply. Meanwhile, Sunak also said last week that it was trying to raise money to pay off debt. It's trying to sell off over $500 million in shares. Last week, a report by the World Bank warned that a severe and prolonged downturn in China's real estate sector would have significant consequences, pointing to Chinese developers' total liabilities, which amount to almost 30% of China's GDP. Beijing is known for keeping a tight grip on the flow of information in and out of China. But for those that dare to question the communist regime or debate its narrative of history, doing so publicly can pose far greater risks. We hear from a China affairs analyst who shares his views on how the situation has evolved. Here's more.
A Chinese college lecturer is looking for a new job. That's after she lost her old one over comments that debate an official Communist Party narrative. It has to do with an especially sensitive topic for Beijing: historical events involving China and Japan. The Chinese regime claims that the Japanese killed 300,000 Chinese people during an event called the Nanjing Massacre. The subject came up in the lecturer's class last month. That's when she suggested that data is needed to support that historical narrative. Song then said, quote, "We should not hate, but to think about how the war came. This is the most important thing." Her words seem harmless, as historians have been debating that death toll for years, never reaching a unified conclusion. But one of her students recorded her lecture and reported her. The college fired her soon after, citing what were labeled as major teaching accidents and adverse social impact. One of China's top state-run media outlets, The People's Daily, reported on the story. It, too, criticized Song, saying she failed being a teacher and a Chinese person. But public opinion seems to be on Song's side. China affairs analyst Jason Ma is one of those voicing support.
For historical reasons, it's pretty hard to count the exact number of victims. That's understandable. Even the Chinese communist regime admitted in their own documents and reports that 300,000 is a very rough estimate.
He said the incident reflects the deterioration of China's social environment. He pointed out that the Chinese communist regime's narrative has become the only acceptable truth, and that any Chinese person who says otherwise or raises questions effectively commits a sin, at least from Beijing's perspective.
That is to say, in China, what you should know, what you should not know, what you should be angry with, what you should not be angry about, that's all decided by the Communist Party.
He also mentioned how the regime encourages people to report others.
By encouraging reporting and disclosing details about each other in Chinese society, the CCP regime has brought society as a whole, at least superficially, on par with the cognitive level of the most thoroughly brainwashed individuals.
Ma states that in his view, Song is one of those the regime finds most irritating, not because she questioned the narrative, but because she encouraged students to set aside hatred and use logic instead.
And that's all for today's China in Focus. But before you go, here's a short glimpse into Wednesday's special report.
A place where you can be who you want to be, go where you want to go. That and more is what the metaverse is promising.
Brave new world.
Paris Hilton welcomed 2022 by throwing a New Year's party in the metaverse. On top of the celebrity hype, many touting the ability to connect, buy virtual goods, and explore virtual worlds. But under it, a darker side.
Privacy is one of the biggest issues we're tracking.
There are no regulators. There are no rules.
And concerns as foreign powers like China buy up large swaths of virtual land. In this special report, we look at what that means going forward, from people looking for a place to escape reality to future wars that could break out.